Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Hello, my name is Nigel Jones, and I'm Sales and Marketing Director at Practice Plan, and I'd like to welcome you to today's podcast. Today, we're going to be having a discussion about NHS dentistry, the current situation, and what the future might hold in the company of Simon Thackeray, who I'm very pleased has been able to join me today. So, Simon, could you perhaps just introduce yourself so that people know your background?
My background, qualified in 1991 from Sheffield. I'm BDS, never done any of the more advanced qualifications. Took my practice private in about 2005, I think, when I saw the current contract as being, in my opinion, a rather rapid way into probably losing my practice because I didn't feel that it would allow me to do what I wanted to do for my patients. Since then, I've probably got more involved with the regulatory side, the legal side, a little bit the political side. I sit on the GDPC at the BDA, but the views I'm going to sort of say today are my views, not BDA views or anything like that. I also do a lot of medico-legal work and can see the problems that arise through lack of communication, lack of clarity in contracts, and how that can lead into problems. But I'm still a wet-fingered dentist. I still do 4 days a week dentistry. Still enjoy it, surprisingly.
Excellent. So just for clarity, what does your role on the GDPC involve?
Well, the GDPC is the craft committee of general dental practice. So it's the representative arm of wet-fingered GDPs that are not practicing in things like hospital or community. So when there's something like a new contract or things that affect general practitioners directly, the BDA as the trade union has the responsibility to look at these things and you know, discuss them, argue them, and then present solutions to the powers that be. In brief, it's the representatives that dentists need for their individual situations, but also on a general basis that what's best for the profession. So I present back to my LDC, which allows them to present to me, for me to present up to the GDPC, and vice versa. So it's a communication portal as well.
So that puts you in a good position to understand both the current pressures, I guess, that your NHS colleagues are feeling, and also a sense of where it's heading in the future. But I'll come to the future bit in a second. What's your sense of how things are at the moment? We've just had the contract uplift. Is that a genuine 1%, or is it less than that with expenses and all of that?
I think it'll be less than that with expenses. The 1% is, in reality, it maybe will be a little bit more by the time they take various other things into account, maybe 1.2% or something like that. But the way that inflation and dental costs are rising, you know, 1% isn't anywhere near enough. But we have to remember that we're all in it together, as the government keeps saying. There is austerity. And you have got to look as to whether it's actually sustainable for governments to invest at higher than inflation rates in various things like dentistry. Sometimes I probably won't get too many friends by saying this, but we've got to remember it's only teeth. And if there are big cuts in NHS budgets that's affecting people's cancer care, affecting the care of the elderly, mental health, okay, we're in it and we're part of this NHS system to a degree. But I think we need to sometimes look at ourselves and say, just how important should we be? And then this is, again, I stress, this is a personal view and perhaps where I come from. But, you know, the BDA has to negotiate these things with the DDRB, but the government don't necessarily listen to the DDRB. And if the DDRB said you can have 25%, the government will turn around and say you can have 1% and like it. So it's going to happen. It's going to be backdated from April, but it is only 1%.
And because of that point about rising costs and dental inflation and things, so that's just going to add pressure. I know the BDA's statement or the response highlighted the dramatic fall in net incomes that most dentists have experienced. So where do you see that leaving your average NHS dentist?
Well, the increased pressure is going to leave them struggling to maintain incomes, or not even actually getting close. I mean, when an overall income drops by a small amount, the profitability drops by a lot more, and it can actually wipe out your entire profit. You're going to find that there's increased pressures coming with pension contributions, which you're going to have to make for our staff. None of that really has been taken into account. And although staff wages are only part of the equation, 1% is not going to, it's not going to allow for that. The bureaucracy in dentistry is massive. The GDC is still, in my opinion, not performing how it should. It's getting better, but it's still got places to go. The CQC, actually, and declare an interest, I do a bit of specialist advisor work for them, but by and large, they seem to realise that we're not that bad and we're not going to cost as much. But it's still an extra cost that we didn't have when the new contract came out that we've got to put in place. How are we going to pay for equipment? Equipment needs turning over and it needs repairing. So all these things, practice owners, I think, are probably going to get a little bit... You can only squeeze something so far until the pips squeak. And I don't know what happens after the pips stop squeaking. I don't know whether they just fall out and go somewhere else. But I think we're at the point where this could become financially very, very challenging for certain kinds of practices and certain people to actually continue to survive. They probably won't want to hear that.
So it's the current contract in its current form with that contract uplift and all of those additional pressures, does it feel like we're reaching a tipping point
there? Yeah, I think so. I think so. There's got to be a tipping point. And whether that is the new contract, whenever it appears, and the people will just stay within it now because it's the devil that they know rather than the devil that they don't. Some people have done very, very well out of the new contract. They've got the business model that works within that. I should be very careful what I say about whether that involves certain gaming kind of things, because I think we've all got to admit that that happens. We can manipulate or work within contracts very, very well as dentists. We do tend to be people who can work our way around something and then see, well, there's the option that we can do, and that's okay. And for some people, it's not as ethical as it might be for others, but by and large, they make it work for them. But it's not as easy to do when the goalposts, they're being moved, and there's things like Montgomery coming in where you've got to give patients all the options. You've got to make sure that the options are relative to that person and relevant to that person. Where are you going to get the time to do that? Because if you're chasing after UDAs that are gradually being eroded in value, in effect, versus the overhead of the practice, where's your time going to come from to actually pay for these increased conversations?
So I think that's really interesting, because that touches on two subjects that I'm particularly interested in. One would be, in the light of the way the GDC has been, the rise of defensive dentistry, as it's generally termed, which to me seems flawed. I'm a non-clinician, but the danger is actually you're trying to avoid a complaint by minimizing the complexity of the work that you're doing, but if you don't give them all the options, you're increasing your risk of a complaint.
Precisely. And the thing is now that a lot of people don't understand the impact that Montgomery might have on them personally. And some people might even know what I'm talking about when I say Montgomery, but it's a case based on consent and material risks to that patient. And the problem with defensive dentistry is if it's defensive to the dentist, you may well then not be providing the patient with the best care that they feel is materially relevant to them. And without having a conversation, which could be quite a lengthy conversation, you've got to get to know your patient, and you can't do that in a 2-minute sheet dip kind of environment. I'm not saying that's what all NHS practices are, But a lot of them where they produce these massive amounts of UDAs, then there must be some kind of evidence of that. Judging by the fact that I'm sure you, from your point of view, when practices come to you to convert, one of the things they'll probably say is, I'd like to have more time with my patients. It's certainly the thing that I wanted to do. So how do you have that conversation? How do you know that you are offering something that is materially important to that patient? And do that in a way that you cannot be held as covering things up from that patient. You've got to do it in a very honest, open way so that the patient does generally know all there is to know about that treatment.
I mean, that communication point, I think, is really interesting. I've listened to Kevin Lewis on a number of occasions talk about something like 60-70% of complaints arise from poor communication rather than actually any clinical error. And that time pressure on it. I was really struck last year by that exchange between the Federation of London LDCs and the GDC, which I think the phrase that stuck in my mind, and I won't get it completely accurate, but was something to do with the challenge of providing gold professional standards at a tin-plated budget. Now, that, given what you've just been saying about the uplift, that's just challenge is getting greater, isn't it?
I don't think it's tin-plated. I think it's worn off the tin-plating now. We can probably see the monkey metal that's underneath. And the NHS will always turn around and say, well, you have got enough time to do it because you've got to provide these solutions to patients. But what they don't appreciate is the fact that we are commercial small businesses and we have the demands of any small business on us. And if anything, more demands, because I don't know anything that's more regulated than the dental industry at the moment. You would think, by the fact that they put regulation in for absolutely everything, that the chances of you dying by walking into a dental practice were probably in the region of 90%, and they're not. So we still have to do this, and we still have these costs. And I find it remarkable. My maths was never very good, but I find it remarkable that people who go into things like the pilots and the prototypes are giving away effectively control of their business into a system that they don't know what's going to happen, that is in an environment where litigation is going up, where costs are going up, and they don't know what the end result is going to be from that, from a financial point of view, and can't budget it or can't work on it. And with these UDAs dropping as they are, or not dropping, but not increasing the way they are.
In real terms.
In real terms, you can't put your prices up, you can't do anything. You can off-sell private dentistry on the back of it, which I'm sure is why mixed practices have the values that they have. But then again, with Montgomery, how do you now square some of the conversations about why that can be done on the NHS and why that can be done privately? Because that's a very sticky wicket, in my opinion. And there are cases going through to the GDC on things like that. And most of the cases that I now get on clinical negligence have got a degree of Montgomery in.
So, and I may be barking up the wrong tree with this, but is there then a tension between the duty of candor and explaining accurately what all the options are and the relative benefits?
Yeah.
And not being in breach of contract?
Yeah. Absolutely. There's a huge tension, because if everything that is available that to get you dentally fit on the NHS, then everything is available that to get you dentally fit on the NHS. So why is that not available on the NHS? The fact that you can spend more time doing a private solution for a patient, you may use different materials for a private patient. Everything that is available for dental health and fit, maintain your dental health, the way I read the contract is that it is. And there is a tension there, because if you're trying to square Montgomery, which is a material risk, which some people, the material risk might be, I do not want a silver crown on a back tooth. The way I smile, you will see it. So I want a white crown on the NHS. All that is available, as we've said, and the material risk. Montgomery, you've just going in a circle there that personally I can't see how ethically we can get around that unless we don't explain things in the way that another practitioner might come in. And the duty of candor, you said you've got to explain it truthfully and honestly. Who's defining what an explanation is truthfully and honestly?
Yeah.
The NHS doesn't tell you a list of what is available. for good reason. Because if there is a list of what's available, people will use what's on the list to be available and no more than that. And it would benefit people to know what was on that list. But if there isn't a list, then you have the tension with something like the GDC using Montgomery, or the GDC using the consent procedures that are in Montgomery can turn around and say, you've misled your patient. Mis-selling within dentistry is something that I think will raise its head. I know people like Kevin Rose have been talking about it, and I've talked about it, that I think it's only a matter of time before maybe not something as big as a PPI scandal occurs, but these kind of things can happen.
Yeah.
The fact that the GDC won't then condemn the NHS contract for having these malign incentives or disincentives, they will always turn around and say it's up to the individual dentist to obey their ethical and moral responsibility using the GDC standards, which is absolutely right. But you've then got the tension of this system that's in place, and the NHS does that. In my opinion, this is my opinion.
So you mentioned then about the system that's in place and referred a couple of minutes ago to the pilots and the prototypes. Mm. What's your understanding about the current state of play with the reform programme?
Well, it's quite convenient for the government that there's now a general election, because whatever was going to happen has now been put back or brought forward, or whoever gets in, or you know, it serves their purpose for them to have a system like the UDA's at the moment, because they're perfectly happy with it, because they can say that it's working. The prototypes that are in place now, they're working on the business model aspect of how it's going to work. I always think that any government that gets involved in running the business model is fundamentally flawed, because they often don't have a lot of idea about the individual businesses. But again, that's my personal view. But in certain cases, that these business models are not necessarily going to work. And the aspects of things like clawback coming in, the government still wants to use, the Department of Health still want to use the UDAs. And I thought the whole point of the piloting and the prototyping was to try and find another form of currency that was more acceptable than the UDAs. But no, they're still going to be the measurements. But to add to the complexity, there are quality aspects that to me sometimes seem mutually exclusive, that if you're going to get the output that you need to fulfill your contract, something's got to fall foul of the quality side of it. If you get the quality side of it, you won't be able to hit your UDAs, so therefore there's going to be huge clawback. If you're going to increase the quality, the costs are going to go up, because you've got to invest in the infrastructure, the time and the people. Where are you going to do that on a decrease? We're now talking about a decreasing amount because of clawback. What kind of business model is that? Because you can't then say it's a guaranteed amount of money for the same kind of thing, because you're not doing the same kind of thing. Access drops because they're spending more time working to the pilot, the red, amber, green kind of systems.
And is that the main source of the clawback, is not seeing target patient numbers?
I think it's the fact that they're struggling to get access. They're struggling to keep the patient numbers up. And then as a result of that, I think there's also the calculation as to how long the registration period of the patients is as well. So these all have cumulative effects then on if you're getting remunerated based on a certain number of outputted widgets, whatever they are measured in. If you can't output that number of widgets and we've paid you to do that, we'll have the money back for the ones that you didn't do. It doesn't matter how good those widgets were, by the way. They could be the best widgets in the world, but you didn't do enough of them. But we want the same quality next year. And by the way, you've now got to do more of them if you want to keep the same amount of money, because you've got to pay us back for the ones that you did. And that's just, to me, why would I put my business in that kind of jeopardy? That I'm convinced that there will be practices that cannot make this financially viable, because in order to output, they're going to have to increase their staff overhead. They're going to have to put other dentists in. If they put other dentists in at a cost level of X, well, who's going to pay the extra? Unless you're then cross-subsidising it with private income, which you may well be doing, but we don't even know how that's then going to fit into the equation. What if they turn around and say, you're an NHS practice and you can only do NHS work? I don't know if that's floats across there, but they are measuring some of the metrics, you know, as to whether a patient is private or not. Why?
Yes, I'm right in thinking, aren't they, that they, as part of the prototypes, part of that testing, they are recording that detail, aren't they?
So
how they're going to use that information?
You know, governments use information to their benefit usually, and if, and again, if the general public get a benefit out of that, well, that's great. But it does seem I'm a little bit anti-political at the moment, just because I think we're trying to deal, as a trustworthy profession, we're trying to deal with Department of Health and government who are not necessarily as ethical and as moral as the profession. And I think we need to open our eyes as to the fact that our agendas are probably not necessarily the same.
Yeah.
And whilst we want it for the patients and want to get the financial rewards for investing in our businesses, the government want to get everything for everybody for absolutely no cost, or as small a cost as possible.
So, I mean, there's a couple of things I'd like to explore within that response. One of them is, I guess, linked to that last point, in that actually, does government have an incentive to change anything anyway at the moment?
No, none. They've got a system that's working on the surface of it, and if we were to turn around and say the prototypes are no good whatsoever, they don't work, the government will say, oh, we'll stick with the UDAs then.
Yeah, well,
it's worked for 10 years. And
that's what the patient satisfaction stats that came out about different areas of the NHS, where dentistry had seen a notable and significant increase in satisfaction.
Yeah.
Sort of, that doesn't lend itself to a perception of a system that needs changing.
No, that's right. And if they start to get the cues around the corner that they did get, then they might change the tune. I mean, the time to do that would be, is too late now. The time to do it would be just in front of a general election, because the last thing that they want, dentistry is never going to win any election, but it could be part of a government losing, or a side losing an election. It's too late. We're not going to get together as a concerted group to actually point this out. And again, it's all hearsay, because there aren't that many practices in prototypes. There aren't any cues around the block. There aren't any headlines in any of the papers. But once access starts to drop, then yes, satisfaction is gonna drop. So if it shows that prototypes would increase the access problem if they were run that way, and they may be able to see that from the stats when the proper stats are produced, are they gonna introduce a system that does that? They probably wouldn't. So we're then stuck with the flawed system that we've got. I say a lot of people have done very well out of the new NHS contract. It's brought out completely new business models. It doesn't necessarily mean that I agree with all the business models, but dentistry has moved into a proper business environment, probably for the first time ever. And you are seeing the rise of these mini corporates where they've got you know, bulk buying. What's interesting is seeing the bigger corporates like My Dentist reducing and even deacquiring, so they're possibly seeing the writings on the wall. The pressure on associate incomes, are they going to become salaried because the way that they would be paid on the new contract, a new contract, would that mean that with the rise of this gig culture, the Uber models and things like that, could HM Revenue Customs suddenly say, right, you're all employees? That really is going to increase the load, because we've then got to pay employers national insurance on associates, so associates' incomes are going to drop. I'm sounding really negative, and perhaps, you know, I'd like to be able to see the good side of this, but from where I'm sitting, I don't see the good side. I see some practices will do very, very, very well out of it. But it's the old adage of, how do you make a fortune? How do you make a small fortune on the NHS? You start with a large one. And one wonders if it's just got to the point where some of these bigger entities can actually adapt relatively straightforwardly to some of these things. But I do wonder if they're now seeing the picture, the writings on the wall, with the fact that My Dentist are deacquiring and are looking at, ooh, what's going on here? Do we need to grow our private side of it? And if they start to grow the private side of it, how are they going to recruit the younger dentists, and who are going to be the dental owners of the future?
Well, that was a question I was going to ask, because I've heard it put forward that one of the ways that you achieve the access targets that you need to achieve is by having a more flexible, adaptable workforce, and you're using nurses with extended duties, you're using therapists, you're using hygienists, or you're putting downward pressure on associate incomes because you're using them in a particular way. So I'm not clear, and you mentioned about mini corporates and corporates, but I'm not clear what the sort of career path is for an associate dentist towards practice ownership now.
It's not as cut and dried as it perhaps was. I mean, I can remember talking from sort of 20 years ago, it was the aspiration to get your own practice, but then they were relatively cheap to buy. You could set up where you wanted, and you were the master of your own destiny. Whereas now, you look at the acquisition costs of an NHS practice, whether or not you think it's over-geared or not, it's great as a practice owner to know that you've finally got a tangible, good investment. But because of the nature of our industry, where it's usually individuals buying, to actually then sell one of these expensive practices, younger associates may well find it's a struggle to then get into the practice ownership system, especially if they're wanting to look at, they're wanting to diversify their skill sets as well. They've got to fund the courses to go on those. They've then got to fund paying the courses back and reinvesting in themselves, because you know the patients will become more and more discerning, and you've got to protect against Montgomery and everything else. Where are the practice owners of the future going to be? If you've got corporates who are not actively acquiring, then could drive the general goodwill prices down. So that might benefit, but if the goodwill prices drive down so far, a lot of people are not going to sell when they thought they would, and they'll just stick it out until the next boom, which there might be with a new contract.
Yeah. As you said, it's sort of painting quite a bleak picture, really, aren't you? I mean, in terms of the current NHS contract is very, very tough. The potential light at the end of the tunnel doesn't seem to be terribly bright.
Light at the end of the tunnel, it's like when they change from proper light bulbs to those really useless fluorescent ones. It seemed like a good idea at the time, and now when you look at it, it's never bright enough. They don't last as long as they said they were going to, and everybody's wanting to upgrade to LEDs. And I don't think there is a light at the end of the tunnel in that respect. The light at the end of the tunnel is perhaps taking control of your own direction far more readily. And if we as a profession turned round and stuck two fingers up at the government and said, right, none of us are going to sign this contract, they're the ones who are then either going to turn around and say, we need a contract to get them in, or they can finally say what I think they've personally been wanting to do for years is, the reason you haven't got any dentistry in this country, Mr. Joe Public, is because of the greedy dentists, and they've made you all go private. But the government then have managed to remove a huge chunk of money, which in the global scale of things is not a lot, but there's the austerity issue. And if they can save some money somewhere, suddenly having a load of dentists moving out of the NHS would be great for them.
And save management time and energy, yeah, and things like that. I can remember hearing back in 1990 with what was then called the new contract, people describing what was happening as amounting to constructive dismissal from the NHS. It doesn't feel like an awful lot's changed in 27 years.
No, and I think the last contract that came in, because of the fact that I didn't sign it, I lost a big chunk of pension benefits through no fault of my own. I don't think you'll ever get a constructive dismissal issue, but I do agree with what you're saying. It's like we want to push you out, but you've got to jump rather than us actually push. But there's the door, and we've opened it for you.
Yeah. And so do you think, I mean, the only thing, I mean, because inevitably, and I've got an agenda and I can't hide that, but your point about taking control and people not waiting for something to happen and doing something proactive about it, that is definitely a message that I would put forward. We are about to have a general election.
Mm.
There is a massive problem with funding of the wider NHS. If, as most people seem to suspect, we'll end up with Theresa May with a massive landslide majority, what chances are there, do you think, that she might actually instigate something more bold?
That's interesting. I haven't thought about that. It depends, I suppose, cynically, how many of her Conservative cronies have got investments in some of the bigger healthcare companies where they could perhaps hoover up corporate dentistry and start providing it at a profit. There's always going to be the political, slightly hot potato. How do you care for those aspects of society that cannot afford private dentistry? Not the ones that will not, because there's a lot of people who can afford it and won't. Now, that might be political dogma, it might be belief, it might be belligerence. But there is a section of the society that will never be able to afford the fees that we can charge. For me, targeting the money into a core service, if she was going to make a big, bold statement, that would be the one that I would want. There's a core service that it's been costed, it's means tested, it's appropriate. It would immediately help clarify the direction of practices. That would be an unpopular thing to say to some practices, because they're like, we couldn't possibly survive on the NHS. Well, take it from me, I'm in a practice in a relatively poor market town, ex mines, there is no industry there anymore, and I've done okay. I've not set fire to anything, you know, financially or anything. I'm happy, but I've made a success out of it, and three other practices in my area have also done that. So if we can do it, I accept there are certain practices that can't, but they're the ones that then would potentially be the ones that are provided for with a core service in their kind of patient base. But those that are in areas where the patients have decided they won't go private, at some point those patients are going to have to come in back through the door, because they probably will resent it, but they've still got teeth and they've still got problems, and there are still goodness knows how many million people out there in the UK who have got teeth, and they need us to provide it for them, the care.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good point to end, because I think that at the end of all of the kind of, for want of a better phrase, doom and gloom about the current state of the NHS, the need for patients is still the same as it ever was. In fact, it's growing potentially.
Absolutely.
In different ways, different generations have different needs. But the opportunity to run a successful practice still seems to be pretty good.
Absolutely.
If you approach things in the right way.
I would agree with that. Get to know your patients. Get to know your patient base and become part of the community, friends with your patients, and you'll understand them. Then you'll fulfill Montgomery. Then you'll have a successful business. You'll just do the right thing for your patients.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your thoughts, Simon. I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.